Kia ora and welcome to this episode of the Amateur Austenite. I am Frances Duncan, author and the founder of the Jane Austen Society of Aotearoa New Zealand. My co-host for this episode is Emma. She will be doing the odd numbered chapters.
Because I'm odd.
Oh, that's a nice way to go. Chapter 1. Catherine is too ordinary to be a heroine, but looks like she's going to be one anyway as she's off to Bath with the Allens. Jane Austen starts off with a very big joke about the fact that heroines are supposed to be a particular way, and Catherine is very not that way. Anyone who'd ever seen her in her infancy would not have supposed her born to be a heroine. Her parents are both alive, they're nice, her father has money, her mother is pretty normal, she comes from a big family, they're all pretty boring, really. She likes playing sports, and she isn't very girly until she gets a little bit older. She's not incredibly smart. She's not necessarily stupid, but she's not quick on it. She's not in any way accomplished.
She's not musical. She can't draw. She's not pretty.
There haven't been men around the neighbourhood for her to fall in love with. No baronets or lords or accidentally reared children who were left under bushes, which Jane Austen actually puts in one of her juvenilia.
She puts a child found under a bush.
Yeah, there's a child found under a bush in one of the juvenilia. And then at some point when the child is about 20, the people who have been raising her realise that actually she was their child to start with.
They just forgot. I remember that.
Because this is the sort of thing that Austen loves to make fun of. And then she wraps up this chapter talking about, again, even though Catherine is not a heroine, well, not an appropriate heroine, she's going to be one. When a young lady is to be a heroine, the perverseness of 40 surrounding families cannot prevent her. Something must and will happen to throw a hero in her way. And it is Mrs. Allen who understands that if adventures will not befall a young lady in her own village, she must seek them abroad. And this is her journey to being a heroine.
So I think this is a hilarious chapter. It tells us what a gothic heroine is supposed to be like. So you don't need to have read a whole bunch of gothic novels before you read Northanger Abbey. And she's also helping you to identify with Catherine's ordinariness, because probably the reader is also just quietly a bit ordinary too.
It's funny how books have gone a different way with what they refer to as the Mary Sue character, which is a self-insert. There's not much happening with the character, so you can just pretend that character is you.
That's theoretically the appeal of Harry Potter, that Harry himself is not extraordinary.
Yeah, it's more circumstance, isn't it? Oops. Oh well, guess I'm a hero. There's a joke about the name Richard. This may be a reference to Richard Crosby, the publisher who bought the manuscript but did not publish it. If that is the case, then this was one of Austen's later edits.
Got an annotated copy. I love annotated. They don't seem to do that so much anymore. It was really big in the 1930s to the 1960s. They would get kind of Oxford professors to write little notes. My note says that the Richard is a family joke. And in a letter to her sister Cassandra in 1776, i.e. well before.
It can't be 1776. She was born in 1775.
That's a good point.
And it's not going to be 1876 because she's well dead.
Well, I'm just telling you what's in here. So maybe it was like 1796.
I'd accept.
Anyway, in a letter to her sister Cassandra, in a year yet to be confirmed, she writes, "Mr. Richard Harvey's match is to be put off until he has got a better Christian name, of which he has great hopes."
Oh, she's so funny.
So it may be that the Richard thing predates the publication issue. Tell us about the publication issue.
I don't have the facts directly in front of me, but from what I recall, it was supposed to be published in 1803 by Richard Crosby. Jane Austen had sold it for £10. At that point, entitled Susan, because Catherine's name was Susan, and it was advertised, but it never got published. And she was pissed. When she was living in Southampton, she wrote a letter to him saying she was the author, and she signed it Mrs. Ashton Dennis, so she could put MAD as the initials, Well, that's what everybody assumes is the joke, and probably yes, considering it's Jane Austen. She told him, look, if you're not going to publish it, I can find someone else to publish it. Or if you've lost it, I can give you another copy. And he wrote back saying, no, we bought this. You cannot publish it. If you want it back, give us the £10 back. She didn't have £10 kicking around to get it back. But much later, her brother Henry bought it back in, I think, 1816, because there's a cover note that talks about 13 years being changed from when the book was originally supposed to be published. So that would make it 1816, which is the year before she died. And Henry, with a flourish, they say, said to Richard Crosby that, as he bought it back, this is by the author of Pride and Prejudice, by the way, because she was quite popular. But as all of her novels were published under a pseudonym, a lady rather than Jane Austen, you wouldn't necessarily know. I suppose anyone could claim to be the author. But Northanger Abbey was not actually published till after she died. The date on the fly cover, whatever you call it, was 1817, which is the year that she died. She died in July and it was published in December, but realistically, most people tend to think of it as 1818 because that's when it really was out there. It was published at the same time as Persuasion, which was her last completed novel. Some people think that she might have done more work on it because it's quite short. They were published together with a biographical note written by Henry, which where the myth of the gentle, quiet Aunt Jane started, because they wanted her to be a good Christian woman and all of this. But if you read her books, read between the lines and read her letters, you discover that actually she was never very nice and quiet. She had a bite, and I like that about her. So as we are doing this series, I'm going to be referring to some notes that were taken by members of our reading group that we read Northanger Abbey together and discussed online. One of them said that the Richard joke reminds her of Richard Musgrove in Persuasion, who had never done anything to entitle himself to more than abbreviation of his name, Dick. I don't know if it had the same connotation at that time. You know, you can say someone's a bit of a dick.
Yes, I wonder when the negative connotations of the word dick started. I feel like that must be old.
Yeah, like if it was a thing, Jane Austen would have been making that joke. So the thing you were saying about the academics having all the annotations in the novels, right? You have end notes with, this is what this means, which is great. We need the context because obviously 200 years later, context has changed a lot. We need those notes. I think the difference being that in the 1930s, etc., when those books were being published with all the annotations, Jane Austen was a very literary figure and she was owned by the academics in the universities. It's only really been since 1995. The BBC Pride and Prejudice adaptation was the thing that started this sort of Austen mania throughout the world. And there were, I think the UK society may have already existed, but the other ones didn't necessarily. And Austen became something for the people rather than for the academics. And this is something that is really important to me. I want Austen to be accessible, because I think she's so funny and there's so much depth in there, and people shouldn't be scared just because some lecturer somewhere, they have a certain view on Jane Austen. I think it's perfectly acceptable to have your own views on Jane Austen as well.
Which is entirely consistent with her known intentions and feelings about reading. As we will later discover, her opinions about novels and the role of novels in people's lives, but also the reading material that we know she liked. There's lots of evidence of that here in Northanger Abbey, that she read every gothic novel she could lay her hands to. She loved Fanny Burney, popular gothic novelist of the time.
She was not highbrow. And when this was published, it was not considered great literature either. It's just, it's a novel. And novels, as you said, we will discover later, were a bit disparaged during this period. If it's not a biography or a history, why would you be wasting your time with such a thing? You were mentioning earlier how Austen is so good at recalling sensations from when she was a child. This line, the day which dismissed the music master was one of the happiest of Catherine's life. We know that Jane Austen loved music. She played the piano every day. That was one of her things she did in the morning. She prepared breakfast and played the piano while everybody was in bed, when she wouldn't bother them. There was something, obviously, that she really disliked, and when she no longer had to do it, that sense of release. Jane Austen's making another joke about she draws hens and chickens, all very much like one another, because hens are chickens. They're just girl chickens. Roosters are boy chickens. I literally Googled that, but then also houses, trees.
Doesn't that just mean people who are not particularly competent at drawing don't draw very accurately?
They talk about her looking after some of the younger kids because being the oldest girl. But then as she goes into her teenage years, she starts to be more acceptably girly. Although they say her complexion improved, and I feel like that is a lie, because when you're a teenager, it goes the other way.
Jane Austen comments that she was sallow as a child. Doesn't sallow mean yellowish?
Yeah. And later, Isabella uses the same word to describe James.
She prefers a sallow.
I prefer a sallow. But to us, it's so obvious why she's saying that. It's also potentially that the meaning of the word sallow has changed a little bit, because now we think of it as sickly.
Yeah.
But during this period in time, perhaps you wouldn't, because a tan was not healthy during that time. Technically, a tan is not healthy now, but it's seen as healthy. Potentially, sallow skin was just... How pale were you?
I think maybe she just got more fashionable skin. Looked a bit more like porcelain with a bit of pink blush.
And she looks almost pretty.
I've got a real soft spot for Mrs. Morland, as you comment. Perhaps because Mrs. Morland is the mother of teenagers. There's a beautiful line here, her mother and father remarking on her personal improvement. Catherine grows quite a good-looking girl. She is almost pretty today. And that makes Catherine super happy. She's gone from being plain to being almost pretty.
It says something about being raised female, I think, that we want to hear that. We want people to tell us that we're pretty. Or at least I do. What is your experience?
I think we'd have to have a social experiment in which there was an absolute vacuum, because maybe we only want to be told we're pretty because other people are pretty. If prettiness were not valued by anyone anywhere, you probably wouldn't care.
Interesting.
But there has never been, to my knowledge, a civilization which did not value prettiness, so we will never know.
Some editions note that the mention of baseball is the first published edition of it, but... Also, I have read that the earliest known reference to baseball is in a 1744 children's book called A Little Pretty Pocket Book.
We'll call it an early reference to baseball.
We are introduced to her love of books. Provided that they were all story and no reflection, she never had any objection to books at all. That actually is how I like to enjoy books too. I feel like you're making me think too much. I'm not into it.
I like both story and reflection. You're reflecting on a book right now.
Okay, maybe I was wrong.
Reflecting on a book and reading a book which contains reflection are two different things.
I feel like what she's referring to here is when it's the reflection, it's the kind of books that are teaching young ladies how they should behave, that they're trying so hard to be a moral story rather than just... Hey, here's a good story.
Yeah, I bet Fordyce's sermons full of reflection.
I also thought of Fordyce's sermons. But, you know, it is a collection of sermons, not a story. And then there's a bunch of quotations, which I'm sure were really funny for people at the time, but I'm just, no, not really interested. She's lucky enough to be friends with Mrs. Allen, who appears to be the wife of the chief property owner in the area. We know that Mr. Morland also has property. He has two livings and he has, well, at least money of his own. So it's a little unclear. You wouldn't normally expect a clergyman to have much money, but it's made very clear that he has money and he's got two livings. So you can't see her coming from like a poor background.
She's got enough money to go horseback riding. But I imagine the 10 children keep him in the country too. Can't really justify gallivanting off to Bath for the benefit of one 17-year-old daughter when you've got nine other children at home.
There are no eligible men, basically, in her neighbourhood. No one's ever been in love with her, and it doesn't appear that there are any eligible men, including someone who is reared and supported after being accidentally found at a door, which is kind of a trope. Think of Heathcliff in Wuthering Heights. That's the kind of book that Austen is parodying, which, when you think about how much the Brontes dislike Austen, it makes sense because she makes fun of the sort of things that they think are essential in a novel.
Drama.
Yeah. All the drama. You notice that in Austen, a lot of the drama happens off page. You don't get to see it. You get to see the ramifications of it, but you don't see the drama itself. And that is our discussion of chapter one of Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. I'm Frances Duncan. This has been Emma. Thank you for listening, and we wish you happy reading. I'm Frances Duncan, author and the founder of the Jane Austen Society of Aotearoa New Zealand. Have to keep trying to say it in that order because I really want it to be Jazz Hands and then be Jazz Hands.